Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Let's bring in Scott Lauber, Philadelphia Inquirer. Scott, how have you been, first of all?
I've been well, Steve. How about you?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. Appreciate that. So Scott Rowland gets in. Defensively, I don't think there's any argument with him at all. As a defensive third baseman, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much without peer during his era, for sure. He won 8 Gold Gloves, and you don't need to know that to know that he was at the top of the class defensively. You know, all you had to do was watch him. He was pretty acrobatic over there. He played third base with kind of with a flair. You know, I think he talked about it last night on one of his Zoom calls after the election. He talked about, you know, his approach, that he wanted to tackle everything that was hit to him. You know, that's the word he used. He wanted to tackle the ball, and he was very, as I said, very acrobatic. He was he did some things over there that you don't normally see from a normal third baseman. And I'm not old enough to have seen Brooks Robinson. I did see, I did see Mike Schmidt a bit in his career, especially in the toward the end of it. And he was obviously a terrific defensive third baseman, one of the best ever. You know, Rowland is not quite Mike Schmidt. He's not quite Brooks Robinson, but you know, he is right there. He is a notch below them, and several notches above most. So, yeah, I agree with you. Defensively, there was no doubt, and I voted for him for the last 5 years because I felt like there was enough offense there, especially at that position. I viewed him as a two-way player. I viewed him as a guy who excelled on both sides of the ball, and to me, those are people that you put in the Hall of Fame.
And there's also another element too, and I know Terry Francona talked about this. He said, look, the guy had a range of a shortstop at third base, which is remarkable to find in any era.
Yeah, he sure did. And, I've heard Tito talk about that as well. And you go through the game and, you talk to people and, like, I think there's, I think some people think that we just get the, voters, we just get the ballot every year and we just sit there and we check the boxes and mail it back and fill it out. And, it's pretty routine. Well, I know for a lot of us, we talk to a lot of people that we know in the game. And, especially when the ballot comes, when you have the opportunity to talk to someone that you know in the game who had experience with a particular player, you tend to ask. And, when I decided to vote for Rowland, I didn't vote for him his first year on the ballot. I'm not sure why. I'd have to look back to see how many people I voted for that year. When he first came on the ballot in 2018, it was still a fairly crowded ballot. We were still, I think, as a body, we were electing a lot of people every year, and you're held to that that maximum of 10 thing by the Hall of Fame. And so they might have been a product of that, but I jumped on the Rowland bandwagon in his second year, and I've been on it ever since. And I've talked to people along the way, and one of the reasons I came to voting for him was just talking to people like Terry Francona, who were around him back in, at the beginning in the Philly days, and then through the Cardinal years and whatnot, and just talking to people about, like, what do you think? Do you think this guy's a Hall of Famer? And I had enough people tell me that, they regarded him that way. It was interesting to watch his rise from 10.4% in his first year to just over 75% this year. That's a pretty meteoric climb. And I think I heard somebody say or read something yesterday that it was the fastest that anyone has gone from such a low percentage in year one to getting elected. And that's pretty remarkable when you think about it. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that the way we vote has changed, the ballot has thinned out a little bit. And also, I think that a lot of people like me have talked to a lot of people in the game who have said, you might want to take a harder look at Scott Rowland, because what he did, not just defensively, but offensively as well, at a position that is underrepresented in the Hall of Fame, only 18 third basemen in the Hall of Fame. He certainly qualifies in the top percentile of great third basemen in the game's history.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know the number of times I've had Hall of Fame voters come into the broadcast booth in football to ask Jack Ham his opinion on somebody they were considering from his era. I mean, so I know exactly what you're talking about, Scott. I've been the fly in the wall, the bystander, just sitting there fascinated listening to it. So it's always fun. Now, can you reveal the other names you voted for on there? Because everybody has different rules. Can you do that now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I've put it out on Twitter.
Okay.
My ballot. So yeah, no, I'd be happy to talk about it. I voted for five people this year. I voted for Scott Rolen, Todd Helton, Billy Wagner, Gary Sheffield, and Carlos Beltran. So those are my
five.
They
all make sense.
I'll say that I gave a really, really hard look at three others: Andrew Jones, Jimmy Rollins, and Jeff Kent, and decided not to check their names just for various reasons. I haven't been able to get there yet on Rollins or Andrew Jones. And Kent is someone, I'll be honest with you, this was his 10th and final year, and in the 2 weeks or 3 weeks that have gone by since the ballots were due, I've wondered whether I'm going to regret not voting for Jeff Kent down the road, because as I've started already to give thought to next year, Chase Utley comes on the ballot next year, and I covered a lot of Chase Utley's prime, and my gut feeling in covering him all those years was that I was watching a Hall of Famer, and I've started to think to myself, boy, if you didn't vote for Jeff Kent, how are you going to justify voting for Chase Utley? So I haven't made up my mind completely on Utley yet. We have 11 more months to kind of kick it around and, as I said, ask people and talk to people and get others' opinions. But as somebody who was a no voter on Kent for I guess just, you know, the eye test and feeling like I couldn't quite get there, I am going to have a hard time kind of reconciling why Utley if I decide yes on Chase Utley. So those are really tough calls, and it's a tough ballot. These are tough decisions, and, you know, I take a lot of pride in the fact that I think a lot of us put a lot of thought into it every year, and and take it quite seriously. So, it's something that you kick around and you wonder, are we doing the right thing with a lot of these names and whatnot? And it's really a testament, I think, to the hall itself that it sparks so much debate every year. I think that's a great thing.
At any point during his time in the ballot, did you vote for Jeff Kent?
I did not.
Okay.
This is my eighth year, so he's been on the ballot every year that I have voted.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story. So years and years and years ago, I was covering minor league baseball in upstate New York, and Gary Carter was working in the Mets organization at the time as a minor league roving instructor. He'd go around to all the different affiliates. And he came through town, and I got to know him a little bit, and I forget how many years it took him to get in, but it took quite a few. And I was not a voter yet. I was not even close to being a voter yet. And he asked me one day, he said, "I have a question for you." He said, "How come, you know, I retired, you know, X amount of years ago, and I've been on the ballot for X amount of years, and my numbers have not changed in all of that time. And yet every year my percentage changes. I go up, I go down, I stay, you know, whatever it is, and they tell me I'm getting closer, but I'm not doing anything to enhance my candidacy." And I had to explain to him that, you know, every single year the electorate changes a little bit. Like, new people come into the process, and people are weeded out because they haven't covered the game in quite a while, so they lose their vote. So in some ways the voting body changes, but also people get a chance, I think, through this process to reevaluate a candidate. And so if you've been a no on somebody for a while, maybe you have a conversation with someone and they bring up something that really resonates with you and it makes you rethink that. And I said, if I ever become a voter, I said the one thing that I don't ever want to do is once I decide yes on someone, I never want to say the next year no.
Right.
So, like, I'm more likely to look at a candidate and say, nope, not ready yet, and then rethink it and maybe check them the next year rather than, you know, rush into it and then say to myself, well, I really regret that vote and I don't want to vote for that guy. And in some ways, I've done that with someone like Jimmy Rollins. I get a lot of heat whenever I release a ballot every year, like, how can you, you know, you covered Jimmy Rollins when he was, you know, at the prime of his career. How could you not think he's a Hall of Famer? And I'd rather not rush into that check mark. So mm-hmm. I may come around on him, but, you know, I never wanted to be the guy who checks somebody and says yes and then, you know, rescinds the vote. To me, you make up your mind that someone's a Hall of Famer, and yeah. unless something extraordinary happens, like, you know, they wind up in jail for something or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you don't ever want to remove that check mark.
What role has the PED era played in your thought process on your ballot?
Yeah, it's played a role. I mean, I was a yes voter on Bond. So I should say my first year as a voter, I think it was 2016. It's been 8 years.
Yeah.
That was really the first thing I had to decide. Like, how am I going to treat the PED guys, either the guys who we suspect or guys who I don't think yet at that point we had anybody on the ballot who had tested positive.
Right.
Now we do with A-Rod and with Manny Ramirez. But
yes.
And my thing was basically that if you were associated with PEDs prior to testing, prior to 2004, I was going to judge you on your merits as a player. You know,
yeah,
like
gotcha.
So I was a yes voter on Bonds and a yes yep. voter on Clemens because to me they were Hall of Famers before any of the reporting of when they started to do whatever it was they did. And then, you know, as the years went by and we started to get first Manny Ramirez and then Alex Rodriguez, my stance on them from the start has been if you tested positive during testing, that was something I wasn't going to forgive. That, to me, was mm-hmm. going to be a disqualifier. So I have not yet voted for them, for the two of them. Again, I may come around eventually. But to me, if you tested positive after the league said you can't do this, you're kind of thumbing your nose at the whole thing. And it's almost offensive to me that, you know, you would test positive after being told, like, this is a line you can no longer cross. So I've looked at the candidates in those sort of terms over time, and that's sort of how I've tried to be consistent with it.
I completely agree with that. Because if baseball did not have a rule in, then how can you then judge on a rule that doesn't exist? Now when the rule comes in, now you can judge because they are breaking the rules at that point. Now maybe they're breaking some sort of code somebody has before that, but there was no rule. And now there is.
Yeah.
It's put in there. I think that's a logical line to put in place.
Yeah, no question. No question. And I have friends just in life, not in baseball, who, you know, they'll ask you, you know, every year, like, what'd you do about the Hall of Fame? And invariably, you always get into the steroid conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And back
sure.
when Bonds and Clemens were on the ballot and I was voting for them, I had people in my life who were like, how could you vote for cheaters? You know, they cheated the game. And, you know, I say, well, yeah, I mean, maybe so. But, like, it was not cheating at that time because you were
exactly.
not told explicitly, you can't do this. If anything, baseball just sort of like looked the other way if there were suspicions of people doing things. And then once you laid down the law and you said, okay, you know, we're going to test you, and if you test positive, you're going to get suspended, then you're cheating. Then you did something that you're not allowed to do. And, you know, we can debate the ethics of it. I mean, certainly, you know, anyone who used PEDs prior to testing, morally and ethically, we're doing something corrupt, right? Not if not like mm-hmm. by the letter of the law in the sport. But you know, there are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame who it's not the Hall of Saints, right? Like there are a lot of people in
right.
the Hall of Fame who were not great people.
Right.
You know, and so I never really felt like I was going to judge their morality. I was going to judge what they did on the field. But if you broke that rule, if you you know, after everything baseball had been through, and then they put in testing, and you still had the audacity to do it, to me, that's impossible to overlook.
Right, exactly. I agree with that stance. I think that's that. If you're going to draw a line, that's the line I think you have to draw. I mean, because it's only logical. I mean, that's how I feel about it. Back to Roland for a moment. Enough of a hitter for you in his career?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've heard a lot last little bit about, you know, we've changed how we vote, and there's no question. I think we have access now to stats that enable us to judge players and evaluate players in ways that we couldn't, quite frankly, when many of them played. You know, when Scott Rolen played, we didn't talk about WAR, and we didn't talk about, you know, OPS plus, and we didn't talk about half the things that we talk about now in terms of how we judge players, and and so those were not goals of somebody like Scott Rolen's, you know, to pile up WAR and things like that, and so maybe now we look at stats that we did not always look at, and you've got sort of sabermetric candidates versus traditional counting stat candidates. You know, Chase Utley, for example, I think is going to do very well in the community of voters who are sort of new school sabermetric voters, whereas Jimmy Rollins, I think, does better with voters who put value in the old-fashioned counting stats, like, you know, boy, this guy led is the franchise leader for the Phillies in hits, you know, and things like that. So I just think, you know, you put it all in a hopper and you sort of like try to look at as much of it as you possibly can, and Roland checks a lot of the boxes that you look at. And again, I think you also weigh how they stacked up positionally at the position that they played. And for third baseman, he's way up there in terms of where he ranks in the counting stats, in the sabermetric stats for third baseman. So that's kind of one of the main things I looked at when I came around to voting for him in his second year on the ballot. I said, well, the defense is one thing. We could see it with our eyes. We could measure it in terms of gold gloves and things like that. We can talk to peers and how they felt about it. Now, how do you feel about him as a hitter? And a lot of people I talked to were like, look, for his era, for his position, he was in the top, you know, 1.5%. So that's really what you're looking for when you're talking about the Hall of Fame. And so there was enough of that there to me. And that's the argument for someone like Andrew Jones. It's one of the reasons I wrestle with him every year. There's that combination of offense and defense that, you know, defensively he was one of the best center fielders ever. Did he do enough offensively, and did he do it enough for long enough? And, you know, Andrew Jones has a very good argument for that. I think Roland had one as well. So I think ultimately that's one of the reasons why you saw his percentage increase over the years, was that people came around to the fact that not only was he an elite defender, but at least for his position and during the era that he played, he was an elite offensive third baseman as well.
I'm still one more from you. By Andrew Jones, by the way, 5 gold gloves, over 400 home runs, so I know what you're talking about. One more. I want to steal one more question. Does personality ever enter into this? Because you have to go down and talk to these people all the time. And let's face it, some are great. Some are forthcoming, some are innocent, and some are jerks. Okay, because it's a cross section of life. Does that ever enter into your mind when you're thinking about somebody?
I try not to. I mean, look, we're all human, you know.
Yeah.
And certainly, as you said, you come across people in life that you like more than others. And the job we do is very much about relationship building and getting to know people. And you know, I certainly appreciate when somebody returns my phone call versus when they don't. I certainly appreciate it when they give me time at their locker versus when they don't. And I know a lot of players, and you hear a lot of players talk about it, and they think, well, you know, is it a popularity contest? Was I nice enough during my time? Did I, you know, as a player, did I give of my time? Was I cooperative? Will they hold it against me if I wasn't? And so I, you know, we're all human. But that said, I try not to let that impact me whatsoever. I mean, I voted for Curt Schilling. I don't agree with a lot of what Curt Schilling says, especially almost all of what Curt Schilling says, especially in his post-retirement years and some of the things that he puts out on social media. I disagree with 99.99999% of it. And yet I voted for him every year because, you know, I felt like he was worthy as a pitcher. I covered Jimmy Rollins. I very much enjoyed dealing with Jimmy Rollins when he was a player. I enjoy dealing with him now. I haven't voted for him yet. Next year, David Wright comes on the ballot, the great New York Mets third baseman. I covered him in the minor leagues. He's one of my favorite players ever. And I think he's short of the Hall of Fame. It probably will pain me to not check his name. But, you know, as it stands right now, I'm probably not going to. So, you know, there are plenty, especially now that I've done this long enough and I've voted long enough, I'm getting into voting for players that I did cover and that I covered for a while. And so, of course, you know, you think about it, but you try to separate it out and you try to evaluate the person, not as a person, but as a player and what they did on the field. You know, I think most of us, I hope most of us are professional enough to be able to make that separation.
Right. I mean, it's something that comes up all the time. I wonder. I assume Adrian Beltre being on next year is going to have an influence too. So,
all right. Yeah, I mean, and I covered him for 1 year with the Red Sox in 2010. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I was in the ballpark the day he with Matt Zizak on the mound. He had a grand slam and they went 4-3.
So yeah, the thing about it is, I'll vote for Adrian Beltre because he was one of the best third basemen that I've covered, independent of anything else. And, you know, people say, oh, did you get along with David Ortiz? Yeah, I got along great with David Ortiz, but he got my vote because he was the best DH in history, not because he would give his time or whatever. So, you know, of course, you know, you're human, but you try to put that aside when it comes to making a decision like that.
I know this went long, but the answers were so good. I appreciate it. I think you gave everybody great insight into the thought process, and I thank you for that and for your time as always, Scott. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Anytime. You know that.